You don't fall into a rut overnight, you slide into one. And that slide begins with all of the tiny shifts in your energy, mood and habits that go unnoticed until it's too late. The one skipped workout, the one late night, the three I'll do it tomorrows, the one off day that spiraled into a 3:47 a.m. cookie and zombie scroll session. Then by the time you realise what's happening, gravity has already done its job. So why does this matter? Well, it's because if you can catch yourself on the slope, you'll never have to climb out of the pit. And this skill of catching yourself on the slope is what I've called slope maxing. You see, getting out of a rut doesn't mean pushing harder. It's all about catching yourself sooner. Because micro-maintenance beats massive repair every time. But if you've only got 1 minute and 31 seconds, then here is the bottom line of this whole video. Whoa. Ah. To slope max, in other words, to get out of a rut and make the biggest comeback of your life, you simply need to follow the rut framework, RUT. First of all, you recognise the slip. You notice the early warning signs before they turn into habits. And you do so by asking, when I start slipping, what are the first things I start and stop doing? This highlights the law of gravity, which states what goes unchecked goes downhill. As we always say, to become aware of the problem is to solve it. So once you become aware, you then need to restabilize yourself as you don't want to slip further, and you do so by using your anchors. You do the smallest version of the right thing to stop the slip. And your awareness of what the right thing is comes from your awareness of what your three ingredients are for a good day. This highlights the law of friction, which states small resistance early prevents a big crash later. And then once you've regained momentum, you need to time your stops, because rest before empty will help you maintain your rhythm, which highlights the law of momentum. If you want to keep moving, then you need to rest before depleted. But following this framework will do one big grand thing. It will redefine what progress means for you when it comes to falling into a rut and getting back on track in life. And you will realize the goal isn't to never slip, it's to recover faster. And this highlights the law of recovery. That is the bottom line of this whole video. So if that all makes sense, then feel free to click off the video right now. But if you would like a little bit more of a... 1 minute, 31 seconds. If you would like a little bit more of a deeper explanation, follow me. Yes, my belly just rumbled. Oh, by the way, before we move on, a lot of people were suggesting that I change the eraser because apparently this one makes an awkward noise. I got a new one, this test. All right, new one. Might have made the wrong purchase there, but anyway. Point number one is recognize the slip. And this is where we are reintroduced to the law of gravity, which states what goes unchecked goes downhill. The bottom line here is, in order to prevent yourself from falling into the pit of doom, aka a rut, you need to give your slope shape and visibility. But before we cover how to do so, let's quickly raise our levels of self-compassion by mentioning you don't fall into a rut because you're lazy or you're a terrible human being, by the way. No, you fall into a rut just because the awareness of the warning signs on your slope just went over your head a little bit as you were sliding. That's all. So we need to raise your awareness of what those warning signs are. Before we cover how to do so, think of the warning signs of on your slope in the frame of these two analogies. One, your warning signs are like rumble strips on a road. If you've driven a car along a motorway, you'll notice, I'm messing up my words, aren't I? You will notice that if you veer off into a lane which you shouldn't be in, you'll start to feel a boom, which tells you, hey dude, restabilize and stay in your lane. But if that analogy doesn't work for you, then your warning signs on your slope are no different from the warning signs you would hopefully see on a popular hiking trail. If there are sharp cliffs ahead or dangerous animals, you'll see signs which warn you of their whereabouts, which lets you know, oh, if I continue down this path, could get a bit dodgy. So, to highlight the warning signs on your slope, which are unique to you, you simply ask the million-dollar question, which is, what's the first thing I start or stop doing when I start slipping? You might need to reflect on previous ruts you've fallen into in order to answer this question. But to give you four examples from my life, Here are some of my slips, or the things I start or stop doing when I start slipping. One is I start skipping the gym. I wake up and I say, oh, my legs hurt, I don't want to train today. And then I have a few late nights. And that late night, or a few of them, means my prefrontal cortex decides to go on holiday. So I start zombie scrolling more, meaning I have more late nights. But the real kicker, the final warning sign on my slope, which I've realised after falling into about 347 million ruts, is I begin isolating. I'm fairly social, I would say, but I like my alone time. However, I've realised that I need a non-negotiable one day a week in which I'm going out and I'm socialising. You know, I'm going up London and I'm being a twat for the day and I'm socialising with people. If I don't do that, which, by the way, for the last 3 weeks I hadn't done, which meant I fell into a rut about 5 days ago, if I don't do that, then I start feeling isolated and I fall further into a rut. So answer this question and then your slope will have visibility and you'll be able to say to yourself, ah, I'm slipping right now. Boom, your awareness has arisen. But the key thing to note here is your warning signs don't shout at you. They whisper. Here's what I mean by this. What we mean by whispers are the quiet thoughts that gently nudge you throughout the day. The, I need a break, I'm tired, CBA. Really, this? This concept of whispers comes from the philosopher Jennifer Wint, whose article I read in researching for this video, and it has a brilliant title. Something along the lines of, self-transformation doesn't have to begin with a bang, it can start with a whisper. And this concept of whispers, is what she explores in the article. And what she says in a nutshell is, if you ignore them, your whispers will gradually carve grooves in your habits because they want to be listened to. Ignore the whisper and it will start to shout. However, if you pay attention to them, you can prevent yourself from falling into a rut. In other words, you can prevent gravity from taking its course. But in my experience, taking her concept one step further, I found that there are four sounds a whisper makes when it comes to sliding down the slope towards the pit. First of all is micro dopamine swaps. You might start to replace the gym for scrolling on YouTube or eating your nutritious normal food with fast food. The second sound is losing structure. You might wake up one day and say, do you know what, I can't be bothered to follow my normal routine. I'm just going to do whatever. But what we know, of course, when you decide to do whatever, where that leads is you doing the easiest thing, which means you drain your brain more, maybe with zombie scrolling, then you have more late nights and you just fall further. The third sound is you justify skipping what usually keeps you stable. You say, oh, I'm too tired to go to the gym, or I'm too tired to take my daily walk, or I'm too tired to go to that class, or, you know, I just can't be bothered. And then all of a sudden you're like floating in the ocean and you've got no anchor. The fourth sound and the final one is emotional cues. Your whispers might just give you the inclination that something's off, you know, it's really, oh, I can't be, oh, really, you find things more annoying, or you just find that your energy levels have tanked and you just have a general sense that something's not right. But moving on here, and before we finalise this section, let's zoom out just quickly and consider the bigger picture as to why we self-sabotage in the first place. Because this is essentially what we're talking about, right? When we slide down the slope, self-sabotage. The grandfather of psychology, Sigmund Freud, suggested we have two drives within us. The life drive and the death drive. Your life drive is your impulse for creation, growth, excitement and pursuit of life. However, your death drive is your impulse for withdrawal, laziness, lethargy and decay. But the key thing he mentioned is that you don't maximise one over the other. Instead, you balance them both. In other words, excitement and the pursuit of life needs to be carefully managed in the same way that withdrawal and laziness needs to be managed, because it can easily become morbid and deathly. In the words of the psychoanalyst Anouchka Grouse, you have to live, you have to act, and you also have to flop. So self-sabotage could be described as your death drive going a bit too far. And this helps us understand that Your distractions and your bad habits, you know, the procrastination or the scrolling, could simply be your shadow side showing up. You know, all those years ago in the early 20th century when Sigmund Freud was doing his most pivotal work, he had a close friend for a period of time, the fellow psychoanalyst Carl Jung. And one of Carl Jung's central philosophies or ideas was the idea of the shadow. Now, many of you might have heard of the shadow before, but it's worth just giving a quick recap. The shadow is the part of you that is an amalgamation of all of your needs, thoughts, impulses, and desires that you have deemed unacceptable, either in society's eyes or in your personal eyes. So what do you do with all of these needs and desires? You gather them all up as if to put them in a big bag and you repress them. You throw them down into the depths of your unconscious as if to say, you will never see the light of day because you are nasty. You are disgusting. I never want to see you again. You will never breach the barrier of consciousness and rise to my awareness. But of course, what you resist persists. What you cast into your unconscious will grow and fester against you. Because what does it want? This part of you wants integration, connection, validation, and attention. So how does it bid for that connection and integration? Well, it targets you in your moments of disinhibition. Those moments when you feel tired. Those moments when your higher levels of thinking have just seemed to go on holiday and you're feeling a bit depleted. Maybe you've had a late night, or maybe you have zombie scrolled for a few hours and you just feel as if you have no governance over your impulses. And then the shadow starts to speak to you by maybe getting you to do your bad habits. You know, these actions you've deemed as unacceptable. Maybe you start stalking people on social media. Maybe you start playing video games after you've been sober from playing them for 5 years. Or maybe you start zombie scrolling even more, watching content you never would have imagined that you would watch once upon a time. So the key thing to note here is in those moments when we look at your sliding from this perspective, you simply need to, of course, recognise your slipping, but then ask, what part of me is trying to talk right now? Through actions. Through the actions I'm taking, what is it trying to say? And you will realise that this part of you, most likely your shadow, just wants integration. Now, I'm not going to give you a full playbook on how to integrate your shadow, because to be honest, that's a topic I haven't explored very much and I need to do a lot of personal work on that myself. But I would say, as soon as you become aware of the problem, that is pretty much the solution, as with most of this psychology stuff. And becoming aware of this problem allows you to reconcile this tug of war within you, because you become more accepting of the many parts of you. Because the key thing to note about the slope in this context is it's not physical or mental, it's emotional. That's why there's a tug of war within you, because there's a counter argument being made between all of these different parts within you. So you need to be the emotional facilitator of all of these parts. If you want to explore this more, feel free to check out this video up here about all of this. But moving on now, I got so deep into that. Let's be practical here and finalise this section. Here are two optional tools you might like to use in order to recognise the slip. To become even more aware of the warning signs on your slope, use one of these or both of these two tools. First of all, keep a discomfort journal. In a journal, blank piece of paper, or on the phone, notes on your phone, note down each time you avoid doing something uncomfortable. Why? You might be thinking, Lewis, wouldn't that just make me incredibly self-critical? Well, you note down each time you avoid doing something uncomfortable to use that as instruction for what you need to do tomorrow. For example, let's say you avoid going to the gym today. Note that down. Today I avoided going to the gym. Then you follow it up with a practical application. Tomorrow I will make going to the gym a priority. One more example. Let's say you avoided focusing on doing the deep work necessary to finalise that project that's important to you. Tomorrow you will make working, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, you can keep it small, a priority. Quick note about priority, you cannot have more than one. You know the word priorities exist? Yeah, I don't think it should. You cannot have more than one priority. I use this personally. If I ever skip the gym, just to keep with that example, I know it's a bit boring using that example, I just say to myself, well, tomorrow I'll just go to the gym first thing. Or if I deviate from the nutritious food that I usually eat, I'll just say, well, tomorrow I'll just make it a priority to eat well. Think about it like a bank account. On the weekend, most people go out and spend most of their savings. So what do they do during the week? Well, they just tighten up their spending and they don't spend as much. Avoidance, practical application. The last tool you might want to use is a circle of influence. Get a piece of paper and write the problem in the middle of that piece of paper that you think is contributing to you falling down into this rut. And let's get real here, this could be an external problem, because it's not all just you personally creating the problems in your life. Sometimes you go through a breakup, sometimes you lose a loved one, you get let off from work, or you experience a big failure. In which case, write that problem you think is contributing to you being in a rut and draw a big circle around that problem, and then a slightly smaller one, but still big enough to write things in that circle. In the bigger circle, the third one, you write down all of the things related to this problem that you cannot control. If you're going through a breakup, you write down things such as, well, you can't control the other person's actions, you can't control their views towards you, you can't control the words they use when you speak to each other, or their values, for example. Go really far. And then in this smaller circle, you write down all of the controllable things within your grasp. For example, you can control your choices, your words, your actions. And the key point here, accept everything in this outer circle, change or maximize everything in this inner circle. Two optional tools for you to use there. Why would we mention loads of tools throughout this video? Well, it's because the more tools you have in your psychological tool belt, the better your chances will be of flourishing. So now we've covered that. The next point, after you have become more aware of your slope and given it shape and visibility, is you need to re-stabilize after you've noticed that you're slipping. And that starts by using your anchors. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. Point number two, use your anchors. This reintroduces us to the law of friction, which states small resistance early prevents big crashes later. The bottom line here is, once you've noticed that you're slipping, you don't need to completely reset your life. You just need to re-stabilize. Or if you find yourself in the pit of doom, you don't need to change everything overnight. You just need to start climbing slowly. How do you do so? Well, you do the smallest possible version of the right thing. You might know what that right thing is. You know, a whisper might be speaking to you right now. That might be one set at the gym, a 10-minute walk in nature, making your bed, or just doing 5 minutes of work and seeing how that goes. But you've heard this advice before, so it's likely hitting as quite cliche right now. So before I give you an even more practical tool to end this section with, let's quickly zoom out and consider why doing this matters. Well, it matters because you cannot think your way back up the slope. You can only move your way back up it. In other words, you don't climb because you feel ready. You feel ready because you climb. Action will reset emotion faster than thinking ever will. Always remember, mood follows action. Now let's finalise this section with two more practical tools you can use to anchor yourself. First of all, create your three-step good day recipe. Think about some previous good days you've had and try to pick out the common characteristics among them. What did you actually do on those days? For example, my three-step good day recipe is make a positive contribution to a project, either a video I'm working on or the projects I'm working on in the background, train hard and eat well, and have one face-to-face conversation with someone. I understand if I do these three things in a day, that's a pretty solid day and I'm going to feel pretty good at the end of it. Now, the reason why doing this is important is because if you can have a blueprint for a good day with three actions that you can just fairly easily do, then you stand a much better chance at stacking good days one after the other. I got this idea from Alex Hormozy, whose three-step good day recipe is write something, train with friends, and eat with friends. Maybe write your three-step recipe on a flashcard or on a whiteboard in your room so you can see these, so you can see it. You know, in those moments when you're in a rut and you're wandering about and you're slipping and you're thinking, oh, I'm not feeling too good. Oh, mood follows action. If I do these three things, I'm pretty sure I'll feel good after it. Comment your three-step good day recipes down below in the comments. I know by saying that, I seem like the typical YouTuber who's like, oh, comment for the algorithm. But who knows? Your comments of your recipe might help spark some ideas for someone else to create better days. And we can all contribute to the love of humanity. But if following either one or just all of your recipe things on your recipe seems a bit too overwhelming, then you can resort to if-then-plans. If-then-plans are psychological tools you use to stabilize your behavior ahead of it, before a dip happens. For example, if I feel my energy dip, then I'll take a 30-minute nap. If I start scrolling, then I'll switch to long-form podcasts. If I'm avoiding tasks, then I'll clean my room and list my open loops on a piece of paper. Open loops, if you watched the last video, you'll know exactly what that is referring to. Now, just before we move on here, I wanted to make a comment about this middle if-then plan. If I start scrolling, then I'll switch to long-form podcasts. I thought of this example when conjuring these if-then plans, and I realised that this is actually very useful, because if I wanted to be really annoying, I would have suggested the if-then plan of if I start scrolling, then I'll put my phone down and go for a walk. But that's unrealistic, because we all know that when we start scrolling, we're going down a never-ending cycle. But what can help you get out of that is switch the type of content that you consume. As Chris Williamson said, the content you consume should be spirulina for your soul, not fast food for your amygdala. So if you're in that loop of scrolling and you switch to training your attention to actually pay attention to something and listen to it, then when you stop scrolling, you're going to feel completely different. Because what do we know about dopamine when it comes to scrolling? Well, you have fast dopamine and slow dopamine sources. Fast dopamine sources are the quick, instant scrolling of shorts, the type of content that gives you nothing in return for the energy you're expending for it. However, when you consume long form, you're learning something, so you don't feel as depleted after when you stop watching that content. Hopefully that makes sense. Now, before we move on, a final tool you could use here is you might want to implement a no excuses day once a week. Maybe every Wednesday is a no excuses day, and you map out all the non-negotiables you want to follow within that day, and you will stick to them no matter how you feel. Or maybe you just pick one non-negotiable. Mine is having a shower and shaving every single day. If I don't do that, I've noticed in the past, then my day quickly goes downhill. So think about some non-negotiables you might want to stick to and pick a non-excuses day once a week. That might be a helpful tool. So you've learned what you need to do in order to restabilize yourself. Now you're gathering momentum because hopefully you're doing some of these tasks and you're following the principle of mood follows action. Now your momentum is coming back. And when your momentum is coming back, what you need to do is protect it by timing your stops. Point number three, time your stops. And this is where we're reintroduced to the law of momentum. Stop before empty to keep moving forward. The bottom line here, discipline isn't grind. It's rhythm. You don't protect discipline by pushing harder. You protect it by knowing when to stop. A cool example of this, Ernest Hemingway, the famous American author, had one rule for writing. Stop when it's going good. Why? Well, it's because if you stop while you have energy, you'll want to return and do the same tomorrow. Whereas if you push it all in one go and then deplete yourself, you're going to have to spend a few days recovering. So, here's what to do next. Set maximums of the tasks that you do throughout the day and instill non-negotiables similar to what we mentioned in that optional tool in the last section. What do we mean by setting maximums? Well, Look at your days and think about the tasks you do which are most important for you or that require discipline and effort. It could be deep work, you know, working on projects that are important to you, going to the gym or anything related to your job or anything else that you do in your hobbies. Set a maximum amount of time you will spend on that activity, no matter how energized you are. For example, deep work, you will never do for more than 90 minutes. When it comes to working out in the gym, you will only do workouts with 7 sets maximum. If you have to take a lot of calls for your job, or you're just a social person and you want to call people throughout the day, set the rule of you'll never have more than 2 calls in a day to protect your social battery. A ritual, or what do we call them, non-negotiable, that I have, just to give you an example, is no matter how energized I am after I come home from the gym around 5 o'clock in the evening, I take a 20-minute nap, because that marks the transition from the day's work into the evening, in which I want my nervous system to start regulating and calming down. 20-minute non-negotiable nap each day. What else did I want to mention here? Oh yes, before we move on and finalise this section, let's quickly zoom out and consider the bigger picture on laziness. Our ancestors had to conserve energy to survive because they needed to fight and flee from predators or go out and hunt for food. You see, back then, any unnecessary use of energy could have been fatal. If you would have gone out hunting into the wilderness searching for animals, but you didn't bring any food or water with you, and suddenly you hadn't speared any animal in hours, and now you're really far from home and tired, you're easy prey for any predator that wants a quick meal. But today, survival for us modern humans isn't the problem. Consistency is. As the psychiatrist Neil Burton writes, today, mere survival has fallen off the agenda, and it is long-term vision and commitment that lead to the best outcomes. Yet our instinct remains to conserve energy, making us averse to abstract projects with distant and uncertain payoffs. So, the bottom line here is, laziness is not a moral failure. It's biology. So the more you work with your biology by allowing yourself to rest and sometimes be lazy, you'll do less damage to yourself and you'll find that your discipline, I haven't drawn it on the board, but your discipline stays rhythmic and your momentum keeps on moving. So now let's finalise this section with 2 optional tools you can use here to time your stops. In order to protect your discipline and to keep the rhythm of your momentum alive, you might like to write to your future self. Get a blank piece of paper or open a blank document on your phone or your computer and open a dialogue with a version of you 10, 15, 20 years from now. Write about what you're choosing to not do or to do today and tell your future self why it matters. And then you might want to channel the persona of your future self to give you responses to what you've told it. You might want to channel the gratitude it feels for you for making these choices today or not making these choices. And if you're stuck on a certain decision you want to make or you're unsure of what path to take in life, you might even want to channel some counsel from your future self by engaging something that psychologists call your wise mind, which is the perfect interplay between your thoughts and your heart, your emotions, your whispers, your intuition, and your intellect. It's a great exercise to do this if you're unsure of life, or of what to do in life, or you just need a little bit of restabilization. And a similar exercise, and the last one we're going to cover here, is you might want to draw a choice map. If you're unsure of where the decisions you're making today are leading you, or if they're worth doing in the first place, you get a piece of paper and you draw, or you write down the choice or decision in the middle of that piece of paper, then you draw a circle around it. And then you kind of draw these branches and ripples, and with each ripple and branch, you simply note down the consequences that making this decision could make in certain contexts of your life. For example, I'm a bit unsure at the moment as to whether I actually need this social day once a week. Well, Let's plan it out and see if there's real benefit to me doing it. If I took one social day a week, what would that mean for my social skills? Well, they would definitely improve. What would it mean for my friendship connections? Well, they would definitely flourish. Hopefully you get the idea there. So once you've gained your momentum, of course, remember, you protect it by stopping early. You rest before you wreck yourself. We've now covered the last point of the RUT framework. So all that's left to do now is to re-clarify what following all three letters do. Following the RUT framework will redefine what progress means for you, which reintroduces us to the final law of this video, which is the law of recovery, which states the goal isn't to avoid slipping, it's to recover faster. So before we finalise this video, the bottom line here is don't measure your progress by how high you climb. Measure your progress by how quickly you catch yourself when you slip. Because you're going to slip. You're going to have micro slips throughout life, from now until the day that you depart this world. Your energy is going to tank. Major life events are conspiring against you to throw you off balance. You know, you're going to lose people. Your health might dwindle. There are things waiting to happen that you won't see coming. So you're going to slip. But you slipping isn't a sign of failure. It's a sign you're alive and that you're in the game. You see, most people define progress as upward momentum, always on the move, always striving, always in that grind of discipline. But real progress is simply shortening the gap between when you fall and when you return. So, all in all, you cannot eliminate the slope. So your only task is to navigate it consciously. Because awareness, not perfection, is what keeps you moving. This could be you 1 week from now. And this might be you now. Start climbing. Final tool here. In order to make this all visual, you might want to get a piece of paper or on a page in your journal. Create a goal garden. And each time you notice yourself, catch yourself slipping, or you recover, or you follow the principle of mood follows action, you might just want to draw a flower on this page in your journal. Then in 6 months' time, you can look at this page and see, oh, wow, each flower represents a moment I faced discomfort or a moment I caught myself in a moment of slip and I brought awareness to the table. Look at how beautiful my garden is now. So, in summary, recognize the slip, catch yourself early. Use your anchors, stabilize fast, and time your stops to protect your rhythm. That's how you get out of a rut. Remember, you don't need to fight yourself. You just need to listen sooner. Thank you very much for your time and attention. Stay disciplined, playful, and dangerous. Adios, muchachos y muchachas. To slope max, in other words, to get out of a rut and make the biggest comeback of your life. Why am I belly dancing?